You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
If you lost Survivor and you're feeling down, David and Jessica will turn it around. They'll break down the rules and they'll show you how. You played yourself and got voted out. This is why Blank lost. And this is why Blank lost. Oh, baby, this is why Blank lost.
Welcome back to another special edition of Why Blank Lost, as we continue our series of Why Blank Won podcasts in parallel with the RHAP Survivor season rankings. I'm David Bloomberg, and joining me on this journey of many seasons is, of course, my co-host Jessica Lewis.
Hello again, everyone, and thank you for joining us on our travel back in time. We got to go way back to season 17, right? Is that the number that we're
yes,
on?
Yes, yes.
So, and I must say, I am very pleased having a rewatch of the season because my memory of it was not very good. So it was nice to go back and rewatch and feel a little better about things after the rewatch.
Now, your memory wasn't good, or what you remembered about the show, the season wasn't very good?
What I remembered about the season wasn't very good. I know one of those lower ranking seasons most of the time.
It's in the 20s so it's not as low as some we've already covered.
No, but it's weird because when I was doing my research and going down my weird rabbit holes like I do, it seemed to jump around a lot. It almost depended upon like who was doing the poll and also when the poll was being done. And so sometimes it seemed to rank much higher. Sometimes it seemed to rank very low. I know Jeff Probst hated this season, so that ranking was always very low. So yeah, but it was interesting to have a rewatch of this season because it's not one that is, I think, a respected season. So it was a good one to rewatch for sure.
Yeah, I think that's why you get you end up with it in the 20s where it is because some people that I've heard really like it, mm-hmm. and some really dislike it, and so on average it falls in the middle.
Right. Yeah.
So. But hey, the whole season, or the season as a whole, was already discussed, on the main podcast. We're here to discuss why Bill Nye the Science Guy won. Wait, no, sorry. Why Bob won.
Yes, we are.
Yeah. The more I watched it, I was like, that's Bill Nye. That is Bill Nye. And I must compliment you on your attire today. Of course, you always look good.
Well, thank you.
I still don't know how you tie that into a bow.
Well, I got creative. I was impressed with myself that I figured it out. I didn't have to Google anything. I just looked at it and said, you know what? Bob figured this out. I can figure this out. And I did. And I must say, I want to pay homage to him because I don't think he is a very respected winner. And I will say that on my rewatch, I love Bob, so I wanted to honor him and his creativity. I considered kind of building my own seat, but that was a bad idea. So we just
that would have taken a lot longer.
Yeah,
and probably been a lot less comfortable than what it looks like you're sitting on now.
Yeah, the couch is nice.
Now, as much as you love Bob and you wanted to honor him, as we've discussed before, we're focusing on two groups of winners for these podcasts: those mm-hmm. who make us wonder how the heck they won, and those who did such a good job that we think it's worth discussing them. Pretty clear that Bob falls into the first category.
Yeah.
Then again, the others in his final three weren't much different. I even said in my original article on why Susie lost, for many people, the question is not why Susie lost, but how the heck she got so close.
I know.
And that's the same kind of question about Bob. And, you know, I have to admit, you know, I asked you if which you were saying, if your memories were bad or you had no memory of it. Mm-hmm. I was more in the lack of memory of it because going into the rewatch, well, first of all, I sent you a text that said, I don't know who half these people are.
Right. Yeah.
So, but I basically forgot Susie even existed.
Mm-hmm.
I remembered Bob and Sugar being in the finals, but Susie was an absolute complete like blank for me.
Yes.
And then it was funny when I listened to the main podcast covering the season and Rob said essentially the same thing.
Yeah. I honestly, sometimes when I do the rewatch, I will pull up like the Wikipedia page just to kind of see what happens. Cause
cheater.
I know, but listen, it's already happened. I've already watched it once, but so I actually didn't do that at the beginning of the season. And my son was watching it with me and he started Googling it because he was asking me so many questions about these people and I didn't remember most of them. So I couldn't really answer his questions. I knew who had won. I knew that Sugar was in the finals with him, but that was all I could recall. And then Owen ends up like flabbergasted going, Susie? And I was like, wait, what? So it was really quite comical because I'm like, this, she's not, who is the final three? I couldn't remember. And same exact thing. No,
I honestly thought it was a final two because I couldn't remember anyone else being there. So I was like, oh, this must have been a final two season.
Yeah.
But then they kept talking about the final three as they were going along. And I'm like, man, what did I forget?
I know. I'm with you on that.
Yeah.
I definitely couldn't remember.
Yeah, we'll talk more about Susie as we get into the podcast. But of course, the main focus is Bob, and we'll look at him by following the same path we always do during the normal Survivor season, which is comparing how he played to the rules I originally wrote way back in season one. Unlike the past couple podcasts, I don't think Bob's win is as directly linked with the losses of the other two. You know, we talked like that person was voted almost as default. Even though it was a 4-3 vote. And of course, we'll discuss how Sugar had a lot of influence on the outcome. But people had been saying Bob was going to win for weeks before the final three. So we'll figure out how that all played out. Anyone who would like to refamiliarize themselves with the rules can check out the most recent version at robhasawebsite.com/blog/survivor rules. Or you can get the shorter and much more colorful version of the rules in poster form at tinyurl.com/DavidRulesPoster2.
I have one behind me.
Mm-hmm.
You have and a few around
I have a few. So there's the poster. There's the, whoops, there we go. There's the white t-shirt. Here's the black t-shirt. And I figured there's a little bit of a spoiler here, folks. There's so little rule following in this season that I kind of had to overwhelm it on the podcast by showing the rules everywhere we could.
That was a good idea.
Yeah. So of course this poster was drawn by Eric Reichenbach and then we converted it to a shirt. And so again, you can get it at tinyurl.com/DavidRulesPoster2. In addition to the poster, I already said you can get the t-shirt that you can go to robhasawebsite.com or robhasapodcast.com. Click the merch link near the top. And there, the RHAP shop now is humongous. So you can scroll through or you can search for rules or something like that and should be able to find it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll find not just one, but two different designs. There's the classic design that is surrounding me and a new one that's a checklist of the rules. And you can get a checklist as a mug as well.
I know. And I forgot to grab that t-shirt on my setup. So I apologize. But yes, you should definitely check it out. Great prices, great products, and really just fun to have. If you are a fan of the show, it's a nice way to not only support your favorite show, but also support your favorite podcaster and podcast.
And just to show how cool you are.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think as a matter of fact, the winner, the last time we were recording, I think there was a patron Brant Steele going on. And I believe that the winner was wearing a Survivor Rules shirt.
See? It'll help you win.
A Why Blank Lost shirt. So that's right. It helps you win in all cases. So now, before we get to Bob in particular, as we move on here, there are some things I wanted to mention about the season, and a few of them relate to Kenny. First, when I was reviewing my interviews with the players from the time, I noticed that Kenny told me, "I'm always rooting for the main strategists like Todd, Suri, and Rob Cesternino. I think they are the ones who make the game, so I tried to base my gameplay on something like them." Now, obviously, that's something we love to hear for two reasons. One, focus on strategy. Two, focus on the man in charge, Rob Cesternino.
That's right.
So, but unfortunately, Ken's pro strategy outlook seemed to leave him in the latter part of the game, because the other thing about Kenny that I want to discuss is something that bothered me when I originally watched the season and really pissed me off even more in my rewatch.
How bitter he was?
Yes, but particular how he was mad at Bob for not handing over the immunity necklace and letting him vote Bob out.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, why didn't you do that? I'm not going to vote for you because you didn't do it. You know, it made no sense in the game. It made no sense when he was still mad in the jury. It made even less sense when I was interviewing him later and he was still acting this way.
Yeah.
I asked him about it. He admitted he was playing Bob, but said he didn't ask for the necklace. Bob offered it as a deal, saying, "I'm a man of my word." And then when Bob won it, he said, "I'll give it to you if I think you're going home tonight." Well, Ken told me, I knew at that point he was lying to me. He was playing me. I wasn't mad that he didn't give it to me. I was mad that he said he had integrity and didn't lie. He wouldn't admit he lied to me. He kept saying he would have given it to me if I wasn't going to stab him in the back. He was never going to give it to me in the first place. And I wanted him to admit that.
Yeah, that was kind of like a tantrum. And it, to me, there should have been more respect given to Bob by Kenny that he kind of called him out on it, right?
Yeah.
Kudos to Kenny for trying. I mean, that's we could see a horrible recreation, or I don't know which one came first, but
I think Eric's came just before then.
Yeah, so we could have seen another recreation of that, which would have been awful. But at the same time, Bob sussed it out, right? And I know that he had some help with figuring that out because of Sugar. But kudos to him for figuring it out. And I think Kenny should have said, "Wow, I'm going to give you props for realizing I was playing you and I was trying to pull one over on you." Instead, it was very much dramatic and feet stomping. And I want you to acknowledge that you lied. And Bob never lied. Bob said, "I told you I would give it to you if I thought you were going home, and you were not going home."
Yeah. And I mean, the other thing is, Ken just seemed to be in a little irrational world of his own.
Yeah.
You know, he acted like, and what he said to me was that he knew Bob was lying when he made the promise. No, you know, didn't seem to be the case at all. Bob made an offer he never should have made. I mean, let's just say that.
Right.
Ken decided he would take advantage of it and vote Bob out. When Bob realized that, of course he wasn't going to follow through. It would have been worse than Eric and Brandon Hant's immunity necklace giveaways combined.
Right. Yeah.
He was, you said he had a big tantrum. That's exactly what my notes are. He was being a big baby.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I thought that was ridiculous. So that was one thing I didn't appreciate about that whole scene. Didn't like.
Yeah. And I mean, you would hope that he would, in retrospect, after the season was over, he'd been home for a little while, when I interviewed him, that he would think back on it and say, "Oh, yeah, you know, that was no, he still was right there firmly on it."
Yes. And he's still to this day.
Oh,
because
is he?
He did one of those quarantine questionnaires. Uh-huh. Still same thing to this day.
Oh, God. I missed that. I meant to look at that and I forgot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so one reason, besides that it was just such a tantrum and continues to be apparently, that I hated it was, you know, like I mentioned, Kenny was supposedly so focused on strategy. And I even asked him if he was the most strategic player of the season. And he said, this season, definitely. There weren't a lot of strategic players. Randy was a very strategic player. Ace was a very strategic player. Somewhat Crystal, too. Anybody else this season, they didn't know what they were doing out there. And, you know, that's certainly true. And I'm sure we'll discuss that more, you know, regarding our final three when we get to the first rule in a few minutes. But, okay, he's so strategic. And yet he does this.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that that was a problem all around. And I don't like that that was such a hang up for him, because I understand things happen in this game that upset you. But I also think you need to respect gameplay when it is gameplay. And he was trying to do something terrible to Bob. Bob mm-hmm. didn't allow him to do it. And he doesn't want to give Bob credit for realizing that that was what was happening.
Yeah. So, all right, we can move on from Kenny for now. But another thing I wanted to discuss is about Bob before we actually get to the rules about Bob. The day after the finale, I was one of two people to interview him before he appeared on the early show. So he took the overnight, you know, the red eye from L.A. to New York, had to go on the early show to get his check, but they had me and someone else interview him first. When I did, I said, Bob, I will give you $5 to add to your $1.1 million if you mention my website on the air. And he didn't mention it. So he blew that extra $5.
You should stomp your feet and be really upset.
I'm not going to give him my vote now. Well, I'm not going to give him my $5. I'm sure he was very upset to lose out on that $5.
Yeah. And I will say I watched his interview on the early show. And
oh, wow.
Clearly very tired. Mm-hmm. So sweet. And just what an incredible man. Just because he was so... just appreciative of what had happened and so humble. It was nice to see someone like that receive a $1 million check and be so mm-hmm. humble about it. It was good.
Yeah. I mean, he was, you did watch the reunion. He was absolutely speechless, especially mm-hmm. after getting the extra 100,000.
I know.
It was like literal. I mean, people say they're speechless. He was literally speechless. Yeah. Like Jeff Probst had to get down next to him and pretend he was Bob say, thank you, everyone. You know, because Bob was just like, so.
He's so self-deprecating, too. And in so many of the interviews that I've seen, if we're going to get there, we'll get there.
Well, just going to say, when I spoke to him, I asked him if it meant more for him to have been the oldest person to have won. And he said he never really paid attention to how old he is and never realized how old he was until he saw himself on TV. Quote, I thought I was much younger and much better looking.
I was enjoying watching him on TV. Yeah. I'm just going to throw that out there. I thought he looked great. And what a badass. Just everything he did, he was just incredibly great at it. It was very impressive. Very impressive to watch.
Yeah. Now, the next thing that I have to mention is something I texted you about when you told me you were watching the episode with the fruit throwing challenge.
Yes.
And what we determined, listeners, is that Survivor invented the game Fruit Ninja.
Mm-hmm.
Because this aired in 2008 and the game Fruit Ninja came out in 2010. So Survivor should be demanding royalties from that game because, you know, that was totally obviously based on this challenge.
Obviously. That was a fun challenge. At least they got to keep the fruit, too.
And they didn't have to chew it first.
I was just going to, that was my next part. It didn't come out of their mouth first.
Yeah.
Oh, so gross.
Yeah. And then finally, I just want to mention that I had to laugh watching Randy at the reunion. He just kept trying to put on his mean face, but a smile just kept creeping through. And I think that pretty well summarizes Randy overall.
I know. I should send him some cookies. He might feel better.
Oh. I don't know about that. Yeah.
No, I probably won't do that.
Yeah. Now, is there anything else this season that you want to discuss before we get to the rules?
I'm sure there is. Now, I did have a fun time going down my rabbit hole research, as I've mentioned. And one thing that I read about, which I thought was fascinating, was how close at the finale it was that Jeff Probst did not have the actual original votes. I had no idea that that had happened.
Yeah.
I was fascinated reading that it was like literally 2 minutes before he had to walk out there. They had traced and copied the faxed like written original right. notes that had been, or votes, I should
votes,
say,
yeah.
that were left in a safe that nobody took out. And I thought it was interesting in the interview how Jeff was explaining whose responsibility it was and how that person no longer works for CBS. I was like, oh, I wonder what happened there, Jeff. So, yeah. So they had to, Matt had to go save the day on his motorcycle, fax the votes over. They traced them. And within 2 minutes time, Jeff had the original real votes in his hand because he flew back on his motorcycle and turned them over. I thought that was quite incredible.
That should have, they should have shot the whole thing. It could have been another great entrance for
right?
them.
Right? Yeah, yeah. Like the votes coming in. How yeah. amazing is that? Yeah. So that was fun. That was definitely fun.
Yeah. All right. Well, then it's time to get to the rules here. Bob is the oldest player to ever win Survivor, and many have him near or at the bottom of their winner rankings. I don't want to spoil anything, but there are some very good reasons for that. He was and remains a very nice guy, but we have a job to do here, and we have to follow the fourth rule, so we can't let our emotions control us.
Damn it!
That means we'll tell it like it is when it comes to the play of Bob, as well as his fellow finalists. Someone had to win this season, and it obviously wasn't going to be strategy that carried the day. Spoiler. So what was it that landed Bob the $1 million? Now that we've done a Gabon rewatch, and I've gone back over my older articles and interviews from its original airing, it's time to take a new look at why Bob won. The first and most important rule says to scheme and plot. And let's face it, Bob may have been the least schemey of all winners. I only say may have because I, you know, can't 100%, you know, go through my memory right now and say no one else was less schemey, but I sure can't remember it.
Yeah.
We've already discussed why Fabio won. And I think he did more than Bob in this regard.
Mm, yeah. Well, and it's interesting, too, when you start listening to Bob describe his own gameplay. He's very honest about the fact that he doesn't like scheming and plotting and lying and being deceitful. And that was one of the problems with his original interview in order to get on the show, is he admitted, I'm not going to lie and backstab. I'm not going to do that. And they were like, all right, see ya. Bye. So like, I think Bob himself has acknowledged he's really bad at this.
Yeah. And, you know, throughout the game, Bob allowed other people to make decisions and he went along with them. Even when he was questioned about it at Final Tribal Council, he said clearly that he was not some sort of game mastermind. But he said that basically this was his strategy. When I interviewed him, he told me my strategy was to let other people step up to the plate. Everybody who stepped up to the plate got whacked by the pitcher. That was a strategy. They consider a strategy to be planning it all out. My strategy was to stay under the radar, and when I needed to win challenges, to win challenges. But I'm afraid I fall into that they category that described by Bob. I consider a strategy to be planning it out. Mm. You know, staying under the radar can be a legitimate part of strategy, of course, but planning to just win challenges when needed, that's not a strategy. You know, as they say, hope is not a strategy.
Right.
Now, it may have worked out that way for him because he ended up being a challenge god, but it didn't have to be that way. Last podcast, we discussed how Ozzy could have easily lost an earlier challenge through maybe one ball bouncing differently. And the same can be said for Bob. You know, one small move in many of the challenges was all it would have taken for him to lose. Or even if production had done the challenges in a different order. Which was completely outside his control. If they had done the House of Cards challenge earlier, he'd have been dead meat. And of course, he did lose that final challenge. So to say my strategy was to win when needed, well, you certainly needed that one.
Yeah, but I do think that we have to give him credit for kind of understanding the dynamics of the people that he was playing with. And he credited his being a teacher with being so good at doing this. And I do give him credit for realizing that there were other people that wanted to play the game harder and do things that he wasn't interested in doing. He wasn't interested in being conniving and being sneaky. And I will say, for him to recognize who those people are and to work with them, to his credit, worked very well because he got into a five very early on. Mm-hmm. And even though he was, you know, kind of the fifth person of that five, they knew that he was going to be loyal and he let them kind of run things. But then when it came to the chopping block, he wasn't the first one to go. So there right. is some credit to be given for that type of approach.
There is. But it was mostly just that he made himself available. You know, he wasn't early on. He wasn't really in an alliance. He certainly didn't go seek out an alliance. But like you said, people started bringing him in.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, they formed the Onion Alliance and they brought Bob in as a number. Kenny formed the Underdog Alliance and that carried Bob along for a while. But he was just being used with the idea he would be tossed aside later. And it wasn't his strategic ability that prevented that from happening.
Right.
You know, now we can't say Bob didn't do anything strategic. He did create two fake idols and propose Operation Fake Idol 2 plan mm-hmm. just to save Corinne. But we'll talk about that more in Rule 7.
All right. I won't jump ahead.
But he just didn't go out and form alliances and help direct the game. You know, which would have given him more control over how everything played out.
Right.
Now, since he won, people may be saying, well, yeah, he didn't need to do that. But there are other significant factors that contributed to that win that had nothing to do with strategy. And in many circumstances, probably most circumstances, probably all other circumstances except the one he found himself in, Bob would have been toast, you know, but we'll discuss some more of those other circumstances, but one of them was he was up against someone who did even less scheming and plotting, and that was Susie.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's interesting that, it's so hard with this final three, because I do think that there is a lot to discuss with each of them. And I am fascinated by the fact that Susie ended up getting three votes. And I do think that some of them were out of spite. I think like Kenny certainly was mm-hmm. one that was out of spite and just not going to vote for Bob. And I do think that because Bob didn't piss people off on the jury, like maybe Sugar did, that, you know, that was something else that came into it. But I think as far as Susie's gameplay, what I find so incredibly fascinating is that she kept saying this, I was trying. And I don't know if she was trying. Like I was kind of scratching my head going, what is she really talking about? Because she did vote out Marcus. I mean, that was her mm-hmm. big move, was that she flipped that vote and voted out Marcus. So kudos for her for doing that and for coming up with that to save herself and to kind of flip the game. So yes, that was a strategic gameplay of hers.
Right.
But also she was very chatty and talked a lot about what she wanted to do and how she wanted to play and what was happening around her. So it wasn't like it was a whole big secret that she was
right.
how she was playing. It was very transparent. Everybody kind of knew what Susie was doing because she kept talking about it. And I don't know if that is a great strategy when you're playing Survivor.
Well, yeah. And we might talk about her chattiness again in a later rule. I asked Susie, when I interviewed her, what game moves she made between her two immunity wins. And she said one of her biggest moves was flying under the radar. That's literally the opposite of a big move.
That's amazing. Now,
you know, like you and I, of course, are not in the big moves brigade. But so I'm not necessarily saying it's bad, but don't tell me your big move was to avoid making any moves.
Yeah.
You know, and so she continued to me that she's a bit indecisive, which, you know, obviously completely shocked me when I was doing the interview. And she said she stepped back to let everybody else be in charge and she would just do what they say. Quote, my game plan was to let everybody else make the decisions. And so my game plan was to not open my mouth. I was just like, tell me who to vote for. One, clearly she's a super strategist. And two, her game plan was to not open her mouth. Really? Mm-hmm. You just said it. She couldn't stop talking.
Yeah, she talked a lot. And I do think that can certainly help you if you're having the conversations with the right people. But mm-hmm. what did she do to Corinne? She told Corinne, I was going to vote you out.
Yeah.
That's really not great strategy. And there was a lot of that going on when she was talking to Bob. And then she was annoyed that Bob got frustrated with her when she was talking to him about who she should bring to the end.
Mm-hmm.
But it was almost condescending in the way that she was doing it. And so I don't think she really understood how she was coming across at all.
No.
And for someone who is trying to garner votes at the end, that's really not how you do it. But she still managed to. And that's why I go back to the just bitterness that people had.
Well, we'll get there.
I know. Yeah. But so that it fascinates me that that's where things kind of ended up for her, because there wasn't a whole lot of things that you could point to that Susie did that was amazing. Yes, she worked hard around camp. Okay. But as far as strategic moves, it's really only Marcus. And that was a big move. That was a big move. And that certainly flipped the game. But that was kind of it.
Yeah. Yeah. So then we have Sugar, who was easily the schemiest of the three, even if her actual strategies often left something to be desired. Or let me correct that. I should say her strategies for winning the game. Because what she said to me when I interviewed her was that she'd been in the Screen Actors Guild for 10 years and was hoping for more work. Adding, the producers told my sister she was playing for more work and she's going to get it. And then Sugar flat out told me, most of what I did was for entertainment value since I wanted to get more work. And added, I got the best contract in 17 seasons of Survivor. I can be on TV for anything in January.
I'm happy for her.
Yes.
That she was able to do that, because I do think that she got a lot of heat and flack for what she brought to the game. People didn't have a lot of respect for her because of her backstory. They thought she was a pinup model and a waitress. And we all know how some people responded to where she came from. And I think that was not necessary, not necessary at all. So I think she had an uphill battle that a lot of people do when they play this game. But at least she kind of had a goal that she was not someone who wanted to play Survivor. This wasn't her dream. They contacted her, said, hey, we want you to do this. So she decided to do it in hopes to further her career. So she's a rarity, I think, as far as Survivor is concerned, because I think you do have those individuals that go on Survivor that hope that they will become an actor or an actress because they're on Survivor. And that doesn't happen very often anymore. That was an old school, like, first few seasons of Survivor thing.
Wait. What about your big Hollywood opening?
What? Don't tell anybody.
Yeah. Oh, sorry.
Super secret.
Yeah.
So I think for her, she had a plan with what this was going to do for her. So, yeah, maybe she didn't really care to win $1 million, but at least she had some structure in place as to what she was desirous of doing with the game.
Right. But of course, as we always talk about, because there are other people who come in and they say, well, I'm not here to win the game. I'm here to have an experience, or the worst one, I'm here to free the chickens. We still judge everyone based on winning the game.
Oh, for sure.
So, with that said, Sugar did have an actual game strategy, too. I'm sure if she had won $1 million, she wasn't going to, be too upset about it, but it just wasn't her main goal. You know, she told me that she knew she needed an alpha male to carry her through the first half of the game, but then she would drop him so it wouldn't look like he had carried her the whole time.
Right.
Though looking back, she did say she got rid of Ace too soon. After that, she plotted things out more than almost anyone else. And she told me she was surprised she didn't get at least one or two votes from people who were into the game aspect. I'm sure we'll figure out why as we continue through the rules. But like I already mentioned, even when she was plotting, she wasn't doing it toward the right end goal. She could have taken along people that she might have had a chance to beat at the end, but instead she took them out.
Yeah.
And so even bringing Susie along wasn't intentional. She was supposed to be the final target. But she won immunity.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, Susie got three votes while Sugar got none. But still, Susie should have been everybody's ideal opponent at the end.
Yeah. And I think that at least Sugar was making decisions in the game that I don't think we saw very many other people making, at least from the, the people in the final three. She was coming up with ideas. She was presenting these ideas to the people she was playing the game with and making things happen, which is, again, is something that seemed to be lacking, is there wasn't a whole lot of people on this entire season that were making things really happen. And she was. She was controlling much of the game, especially towards the end. And I appreciate the fact that she was doing so and also kind of calling people out when they were giving her flack for it. Like, this is what we're doing. We're playing a game, right? So I think that her strategy, though different than most, at least it was a strategy. At least it was something that she felt good about in the end and felt that it was significant and that it mattered. She wanted the right person to win, which I can appreciate. At least that's what she was desirous of, is that the good people should win, not the bad people. And there was some bad people that she was dealing with very regularly out there. So I can't necessarily fault her for taking that position and utilizing that type of strategy.
I can, and we will as we go on. Now, before we leave this rule, I want to read some of the post-finale column that was written by Jeffrey Sadow. He was one of my regular writers. He wrote the strategic overview of Survivor column. And in his real life job, he was a professor of political science at Louisiana State University. He summed up strategic play this season by saying, "As it turned out, Susie nearly became the least deserving winner of all time, precisely because good strategy counted for so little. That Susie got 3 of 7 votes for a game she admitted involved little strategy by her normally waiting for others to tell her how to vote emphatically shows the devaluing of strategy throughout it. It also points to the great irony that the one move she did make that smacked of any strategy, changing sides after the second tribal swap that directly led to the elimination of Marcus, followed by Charlie, Randy, and Corinne, took out of the game players that promised to bring a high degree of sound strategy to the game. It might have been marvelous to behold, but instead we got treated to the blundering of Ken, the non-strategy of Susie, the minimal strategizing of Bob and Maddie, and the anti-strategy of Sugar. It also tells us who values strategic play, what we can do with this season, which halfway through had so much potential, only to watch bad luck for the skilled players wash it away. If you have it on DVR, erase it. If you have it on VCR tapes, burn them. Or, less dramatically and more environmentally friendly, tape over them. If you have it on DVD, destroy them. Wait till next year."
That's harsh.
That's, you know, strategic overview. He wasn't taking into account anything else. Strategic
and
overview.
Yes. I mean, this is truly a final three that struggled to find a lot of answers to those questions about what were their moves. And going back to Susie for just one second, she didn't even like hone in on that Marcus move. I think she might have mentioned it once, but didn't sit there and say, "Hey, listen, it's because I flipped that you're sitting there and you're sitting there and you're sitting there."
All three of them. We'll get to that in Appendix B. All three of them screwed up so badly in their final tribal council.
Yeah. But,
all right. Well, we can move on to the second rule with that very dramatic ending to the first rule. And it says not to scheme and plot too much. And of course, to keep your scheming secret. Considering this final three, this may be the shortest ever summary. Sugar did have an issue here. But before I get to it, can you think of anything Bob or Susie did, other than, like you've already mentioned, Susie talking too much, that schemed and plotted too much?
Can I go with no?
Yeah, there's only one right answer. It has two letters and you hit it on the head. The thing I was thinking of for Sugar is that she had an alliance with Kenny, which he thought was so solid, he didn't even question her after she voted out Crystal. But then Sugar turned on him and saved Maddie. Of course, she then just as quickly turned on Maddie to help save Bob. So even those with whom she had aligned were unhappy with her by the time she got to final three, because she kept turning on them for no good reason.
Yeah.
The only person who would have been happy with her was Bob, and he obviously wasn't in a position to give her a vote.
Right. I do think that was part of Sugar's biggest problem, is that when she would form a relationship with someone, I think that she presented it as it was a very genuine thing. And I do think that it was a genuine relationship that Sugar wanted to create. but at the same time, you're playing a game and you have to eliminate people as part of this game. And so that, I think we saw her actual struggle that she had to go through in voting people out that she had formed relationships with. And I think that when you create a relationship with people like Sugar did, in the manner in which she created them, that vote out stings more than right. any other.
Yeah, and we've seen that before.
Yes, they feel like they are so close and that they really matter to this person. And then that person is the reason why they get voted out. So, yeah, I do think that that was a very big problem for Sugar, was finding that line. And she went over it every time.
Yeah, yeah.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
All right, let's go to the third rule, which talks about being flexible. How do you think Bob did here?
Well, I think Bob was in an interesting position because he didn't really have to be flexible because he was, well, because he obviously was low man on the totem pole once Marcus got voted out and kind of was like, well, at some point my time is going to come, right? I'm on the chopping block. I'm going to get voted out. And he came up with mechanisms to kind of keep him around. He was very handy. He was feeding them. He was tending to the fire. He was making himself necessary. But he was also making fake idols at the same time, kind of having a backup plan and winning immunities. So it was an interesting place that he was in because there wasn't a whole lot of places for him to go, but he was willing to go there if he needed to. He and Sugar formed a relationship and he did foster that relationship with Sugar, which ended up obviously benefiting him in the end. I mean, hugely. So his ability to be flexible, I think, just really based it really was based upon the circumstances and what was happening at that time. And he made choices based upon what was happening, but it wasn't like he was the one making those things happen. He was almost like a responsive flexibility as opposed to, I'm going to do this and I'm going to jump ship or I'm going to switch things up or I'm going to do what I need to do. It was just more of a responsive thing.
Yeah, I would say he was the ultimate in flexibility because he never stood up and said something had to go a certain way. Now, you know, he would say that's because things always went the way he wanted them to. Now, I think that's a lot of that is because people used him as a number, which I mentioned before, which put him in the majority. You know, first, I already listed all the alliances he was in. But what happened was, so he went from alliance to alliance as people just brought him in. And then he stayed in the background while the more obnoxious and dangerous players were systematically eliminated.
Mm-hmm.
Then he aligned with Ken and Crystal. Then he aligned against Ken and Crystal. And so, yeah, he did well here, even if it wasn't specifically his intent to do well in this regard. He just, you know, kind of floated along.
Right. He was flexible when he needed to be.
Right. Now, just as obviously, I would say Susie was fine with this rule since she was willing to go along with anything that, well, didn't involve herself getting voted out. Whoever made her the best or sometimes most recent offer won her voting services.
That's true. But she did flip sides. She went, you know.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
So there was that one moment that she had.
One shining, glorious moment that she had.
Sorry, Marcus. That's her, that's her thing.
So, yeah. And then finally, we have Sugar, who was flexible in her alliances, but again, not really for strategic reasons. She just jumped alliances when she felt it was right to do so, even if quote unquote right was more about emotional or future employment opportunities.
Good point. No, yes. I do feel like Sugar was someone who did seem to be the most able to float amongst everyone. And it was probably really how the game started for her, right? Because she was immediately sent off to, was it Exile? Is that what they called it in this one?
The Sugar Shack.
The Sugar Shack. So she spent a lot of time in the Sugar Shack by herself, eating a lot of fruit, which was wonderful. But I do think that for her, she didn't really have an opportunity to really form a strong bond with a group of people. And that's why I think her individual relationships became more significant, because she didn't have enough time to really become part of a group. It had to be one-on-one, because that was really all she was presented with at the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah. So I just said that she made a lot of those decisions, besides the future employment part, on emotional reasons. And that takes us right to the fourth rule, which tells players not to let their emotions control them. And so we'll start with Sugar, or we'll continue with Sugar, because she was the epitome of breaking this rule.
Yeah.
Her whole game was emotional. Yes, we said she made emotional, or I'm sorry, she made strategic moves, but she made them based on, like you said, who she thought was good or bad, and what would further her career, all rather than how she could win at the end. She told Bob she knew he was the biggest threat, but she wouldn't vote against him. Quote, I just think the good guy should win at the end.
Yeah, she was definitely an incredibly emotional player, and it probably stemmed from where she was in a personal space as well. She was going through a lot personally with her father passing, and I do think that that definitely affected her ability to play this game and affected the decisions that she made emotionally, like the father-brother comparison she had with Bob and Maddie. And so all of that, I think, was very difficult for her. But I do think that as far as emotional gameplay is concerned, she was definitely very affected with every decision she was making, because she wasn't playing to win. And we've already talked about that. She was just playing for the good person to be sitting there at the end.
Yeah, I mean, she wanted to go to the end with Maddie and Bob, even though she knew she would be dead meat against either of them, let alone both of them.
Right.
But she, like you said, she had come to feel Maddie was a surrogate brother. Bob was a surrogate father. They were the quote unquote good people she wanted in the finals. So she supported them. She targeted the others. When Susie shocked everybody by winning the final immunity challenge, Sugar had a choice. Considering, like we just said, like you just said, considering she had just lost her father, it was no surprise that she helped her Gabon dad into the tiebreaker that he won easily. Mm-hmm. Even Maddie saw it coming, as he told me, once Jeff brought up that Sugar compared me to her brother and Bob to her father, I knew Bob would take the prize because Sugar lost her father and she found a place in her heart for Bob. Now, I asked Sugar at the time if she regretted playing emotionally rather than more strategically and giving herself a chance to win. And she echoed the things that I've already mentioned, saying she played to win America's heart, not necessarily the jury's. She continued, I believe Bob deserved it, and Bob and Susie's family were very appreciative. My sister told me that before the finale, and I was like, they should love me. I'm about to give him $1 million.
I think this is probably like the first time and only time really on Survivor where it's literally someone is handing someone $1 million.
Yeah.
And they're bringing them into that final three, not because I can beat them, but because they deserve it and I want them to win. So they should be sitting here.
Yeah.
Incredible thing to see. I don't think we've ever seen it. I think this is the only time it's ever happened.
Yeah. I mean, there have been other times when someone has handed someone $1 million. Woo, but bringing Tony, handed him $1 million.
Yeah.
But it wasn't intentional.
Right. Exactly. I mean, this was an intentional decision that she made. She knew that she was going to lose to either of them. And so she wanted one of them sitting there because they deserved it.
Yeah. And we've heard that before. I, although I usually feel like we hear it on Big Brother more than Survivor, like, well, if I can't win, I want a good person to win. So that's why they bring someone with them who is going to beat them. You know, but I think in most of those cases, they believe they're going to win. They just say that as kind of a rationalization. So, all right, moving past Sugar, and we'll do backwards, you know, on the chain this time. I think we can give some credit to Susie here because she didn't allow her emotions to get in the way of her gameplay, such as it was. For example, at one point she noted, you know, Survivor is a game. When she made that flip, she might not have exactly played the game very much, but she also didn't let her emotions guide her.
Well, and I do think that this season in particular could have had a lot of emotional responses, as we did see with Sugar. There was a lot of really uncomfortable moments and a lot of things that were expressed and said, and a lot of people seemed emotional. I mean, honestly, like on this season. And so the fact that Susie kind of kept it in check, because she could have really come back at some people, and she didn't, I think, at all really do that. And I don't know if she just has the inability to read a room and just thought.
Have you been reading my notes?
There's just something a little bit off there. Like, I she never seemed offended. She didn't seem troubled by what was transpiring. And so maybe that was what allowed her to play without making emotional decisions.
Yeah. Now, Bob was also able to put aside his emotions throughout the game. You know, he obviously, we've talked about, was a very friendly guy, but he wasn't about to let somebody stick around just because he liked them. Look at the Randy situation. Some people would have refused to participate because Randy was a friend. But Bob understood that it was a game move. He had to do what he had to do. And I have more on that in a couple minutes. But the one time Bob did let his emotions get the better of him was when Susie won final immunity and she would not shut up.
Yes.
You have already referenced this. But, you know, the other thing is he really didn't think he had any reason to control it. The man had been controlling his emotions for, what, 38 days up to that point? And he, as far as he knew, he was out. She won. He was out. And she wouldn't be quiet. So, you know, I can't blame him. I mean, and even then, it's not like he blew up at her, although she took it that way. She was like, oh, my God, it was so terrible. It was just like, oh, my God, stop it. You know, that was about it.
Yeah. And I think for Bob, what was interesting is he came into this game, I think, really understanding how he would be perceived. And I think because of that, he did have to keep a lot of things in check. If you already are being looked at as the oldest person on the tribe, and which then potentially makes you the weakest person on the tribe, just with the way people's minds kind of structure things, I think that Bob really had to maintain certain components of himself. And if he had become more emotional throughout the game, then that probably wouldn't have helped him at all, because there was already things kind of stacked against him. So it's like he had to work extra hard at certain parts of the game that he normally wouldn't have had to, but for the age and how it was being presented.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. All right. We could go to the fifth rule, which talks about the social game and reminds players that they need to pretend to be nice, much like you were just talking about. So we've already talked about how Bob was friendly, and that doesn't really even begin to describe him. He made people laugh. They liked him. He helped at camp. You name it. There were so many people on this season who absolutely hated each other, but everyone liked Bob, except Kenny at the end, of course, but even Corinne, who had plenty of not so nice words for other players, said in her final words that the only people she liked were Bob and Kenny. I was a bit surprised that she didn't hold a grudge against Bob for participating in the fake immunity idol scam against Randy. And so I asked her about it in my interview with her at the time. And this is that additional information I was talking about. She said that the others pulled Bob aside and said he was going to be voted out, not Randy. But if he gave Randy the fake idol, they would save him for one round. Corinne said, he is not that guy. That is not representative of his behavior, which is why you saw him flipping out at Sugar. That moment, there is more of that they didn't show. He is just twisted with guilt. He was a broken man. He said he didn't come on the show to be someone he's not. He can't believe he did that. He did it to save himself one more round, and they didn't show that. So then I asked Bob about it after the finale, and he agreed, saying if I hadn't have given Randy the idol, I'd be voted out next. Sugar actually said that to me. She warned me I was next on the chopping block. I just did it primarily to gain one more week on the show. And of course, that 1 week led all the way to 39 days and the win. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and I don't fault him for obviously making that choice, because clearly if you're being told you're getting voted out unless you do this. So I do think that, you know, as far as Bob is concerned, it doesn't surprise me at all that everybody did like him so much, because again, how he represented himself and what he brought to the tribe. He provided so many things to everyone that was there that it almost just, he becomes like a constant at camp, right? Where it's like he's providing them food, he's providing them shelter, he's handy, he's building things. And so Bob just kind of integrates himself so well by doing those things that people appreciate. And then he just ends up being liked without having to seek out that wanting to be liked. Like, I'm not trying to be your friend. It's just going to happen because
it's just this natural.
Like, this is how I'm going to present myself to you and what I can bring to the table. So everyone just ends up liking Bob. And, you know, we've had this conversation about oftentimes people will vote for who they like better. If it's between two people, they'll pick who they like more. Bob had that in the bag. I mean, as far as the likability component, 100%, it was all Bob all day long.
Yeah. And he didn't have to pretend to be nice, like this rule says. That was just him.
Yeah, absolutely.
And in fact, one of the only times Bob broke from his usual personality was what I referenced when he blew up at Sugar. And even then, Sugar seemed to take it in stride, kind of like fatherly advice, like, you were a bad girl, you shouldn't have made me do this. And, you know, we all know that Sugar never should have voted against Maddie to let Bob make it to the end via the fire making challenge. It shows Bob's social game. She felt she felt like she'd lose to both, and she preferred to lose to him. Though, of course, that went back to the situation that we already discussed.
Yeah.
So moving on to Susie, she was in a similar position to Bob, but once again came in second when it came to being well-liked, especially among some of her former tribe mates. Mm-hmm. When I asked her why she thought that she got the three votes she did, she said, I want to believe that it was probably my not disrespecting people and just being honest with them and being kind. I was very giving. I didn't feel I had to be nasty about anything. With Kenny, Crystal, and Maddie, who voted for me, we had a good connection. We were good friends. I just adore them. I got along with everybody. And then she added, I really had a hard time. I knew I had to lie and deceive people. I didn't feel it was necessary to be nasty to people. And then she also said, I always knew I was a pretty giving person. But even when it came down to food, I didn't have a problem. Being kind is really a neat thing to do. I found myself being even kinder.
I do think that Susie comes across as a very genuine individual. She really is just kind of, this is who she is. And it's kind of like Bob, like not pretending, she's not apologizing. And she's almost like that to a fault, because she didn't make sense to people. They would talk about her in their confessionals and they were like, I don't even know what's happening. Like, I'm not sure where Susie is coming from. But that was just who Susie was. And so I do think that Susie didn't think that she needed to pretend to be anything other than herself. And that was what Susie presented, and that was what she did. So I don't think she pretended at all. I think she was just Susie.
Yeah. Now, there was one time when Susie wasn't as kind as she could have been, and that could have been the $1 million time. As she told me, apparently I wasn't kind enough to Randy. I feel like I didn't get to know Randy better, and he was the vote that cost me. I feel bad for that because I didn't reach him enough. It was not meant to hurt him. It was just a perception I had of the whole cookie incident. Now, I should have done this with cookies.
I know. Oh, I should have had cookies.
Offered each other a plate of cookies. But I have to say, I really doubt that Randy didn't vote for her based on that single incident. I know he said that, but like we said before, he puts on a mean face and has the smile behind it. You know, in most cases, not in all cases this season, and he has fessed up and apologized for some of that. But, you know, I think he just disliked her in general. And he certainly had reason to do that. Not, you know, the flip for one thing. Mm-hmm. And those two are just never going to get along in real life either. And so I think he just wanted to play up that particular moment to kind of rub it in her face that she yeah. did that and say, if you had done this one thing, you'd have won $1 million. But either way, she clearly was not on his good side.
Well, and I think that we could even go back from the cookie incident before that time, because he and Corinne were very vocal with each other, how much they hated everybody.
Yes.
And so I don't think that anyone was going to fall into their good graces. They had already decided who they liked and didn't like, and it didn't matter at that point. Nobody mm-hmm. could sneak their way in. And so I think out of the three people that were left for him to,
right.
to vote for, I think that he really just chose the person that he disliked the least.
Well, he said that in his Ponderosa video, actually. that's exactly what he said.
See, I didn't even watch the Ponderosa yeah. videos. I just yeah. figured this out.
Yeah. So, yeah. Now, that, you know, there were other things with Susie, of course, and you mentioned one of them already when I said, have you been reading my notes? She was completely unable to read the room. She talked too much. You know, I'm sure she had mostly kind intentions, like we said, but she just didn't have a filter between the brain and the mouth.
Yeah.
You know, she told Corinne she had planned to vote her out. You mentioned that earlier. We just said she told Randy what she thought about the cookie incident. When clearly, why would you criticize Randy? Why would you say anything like that? You have lived with this man. You know how well he's going to take that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. She went on and on to Bob about winning the final immunity challenge, which we already discussed. You know, and then she even complained that Bob didn't seem happy for her. Like, totally not getting it. You winning means he loses the game, or right. at least that's what yeah. they thought. Yeah. How come he can't be happy for me? I was always happy for him.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. Yeah, she just didn't get it.
Yeah, no, I do think there was definitely a disconnect there, especially in that particular moment. I thought was very interesting was that she ended up taking that so personal. And again, mm-hmm. I feel like this is very similar to a lot of the things that we saw this season where people were not rewarding gameplay. They were taking things personally when they probably shouldn't. Like, no, it makes sense that Bob is not real happy for you right now because he just lost $1 million potentially. And I just feel like it's one of those situations where too many people were forgetting the game aspect
yep.
of the actual game while they were playing this season.
Yeah, it's like, oh, tell me how happy you are for me. No, you know, mm-hmm. it's like, I mean, he congratulated her. It was probably half-hearted, you know, but that wasn't enough for her.
Well, she had congratulated him every time.
Yeah, I know. All right, moving to Sugar. She wasn't quite as, yes, I'm going to say it, sweet as the edit made it out to be.
Look at you. You went there.
Yeah, and even the edit had a few bitter parts for her. Charlie told me in his post-game interview, I think she's getting the most inaccurate edit. She was very unlikable out there. She was kind of like a princess. She demanded where to sleep in the hut. She tore up our bags and would wear them as dresses without asking. She would wear our clothes without asking. She said what was on her mind all the time and did what she wanted to do. That's great in real life. I would say it's really not, but okay. That's great in real life, but in Survivor, I never felt like she stepped back and thought, is this fight really a strategic move? Is tearing up their bags going to piss people off? Ken, in his interview, confirmed to me saying Sugar got the best edit of the season. They gave her the sweetheart role, and she wasn't like that. She cried a lot and was annoying a lot of people out there. She was very demanding and wanted things her way.
Interesting.
So yeah, I, of course, gave Sugar a chance to respond to these things. We talked last time. I always give people an opportunity to respond to attacks from others,
mm-hmm.
Which gave us some great clips last time with Coach and Ozzy. But anyway, when I gave her a chance to respond to these things, she didn't directly answer. But instead, she talked about Charlie being Corinne's friend, like basically saying, oh, well, of course, Charlie would say something like that.
Mm.
But I think there is enough independent evidence here that we can reasonably conclude that Sugar didn't exactly follow this rule. I mean, we know that she annoyed the other players. And she annoyed them enough to get zero votes from the jury, even against Susie.
Yeah. I was fascinated that when I saw the vote count after I learned that it was Susie, I thought, oh, so Sugar got three votes. Like, that was what I thought going into this, that it was going to be 4-3 with Sugar getting three of the votes. But I do think that there's a lot of things that need to be discussed regarding the jury once we get to that point.
Yep, we're getting there.
I won't jump ahead.
That's right.
So, I do think that there, I mean, I can't speak to the edit. I know I've spoken to Sugar personally. I think she's a wonderful individual and she's incredibly talented. But obviously, I wasn't out there. And all of these people are saying that she was not what we saw on screen. Then, you know, we have to wonder about that. I was always fascinated by the clothes that she was wearing because I was like, oh, how'd she make that dress? And she's wearing a male's underwear, but she wasn't the only one that I saw rocking a guy's underwear. I think Corinne was too. So clearly people might have just been sharing if they were taking. That's a whole different game.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, the sixth rule warns against being too much of a threat. And this was an area where Bob failed by succeeding. He was practically the very definition of a threat. Episode after episode, people planned to boot Bob, but he kept winning challenges or finding other ways to avoid the chopping block. Each time he did, the target on his back just got a little bigger, but then he won again.
Yeah, and I think it's fascinating that so many people throughout the season called him a threat. So many people talked about wanting to vote him out, and he really was this person that everybody saw as a threat at the end because he was so likable, a threat because he was so good in challenges. There was all of these components of him, and yet he still only got four votes.
Now, interestingly, early in the season, he was not at all viewed as a threat.
No.
You know, in the early swap of episode 3, he was ranked third in the tribe, but picked second to last. However, he was, at the same time, he was never seen as a weak link, despite being older. Like you said earlier, older is usually associated with weaker, but he quickly proved that wasn't the case for him. You know, it helped that his tribe won a lot during the pre-merge. He was never the weakest or the strongest at that point. And as Jeff Probst said in the recap episode, his fatherly ways and inventions kept him around. You know, and Bob said, I'm valuable to them. They've grown to like me. So he didn't become a real threat until around the final eight, when you started really hearing people say they wanted him out even more than Randy and Corinne. But Randy's behavior saved Bob. And then, you know, Bob was mentioned again and again, but he always dodged it. And as he said in his early show interview, his age helped him fly under the radar for much of the game. And then when he needed to start winning challenges, the others didn't expect it.
Yes. And I think that that was one thing that he did so exceptionally well, was utilizing his age for what it represented. Nobody thought that he was going to be this big challenge beast.
I didn't remember that he was.
I didn't either. I was blown away. I was absolutely blown away. And not only was he a challenge beast, he was so calm the entire time that he was in the middle of these challenges. He didn't seem to be panicking. He took his time. He was very controlled, very calculated. And I do think that the physics background probably helped him in that regard, too, to just kind of maintain his composure. But physically, just blowing people away, like Maddie, who he should not have been so even and beating Maddie in all of these challenges. So very impressive. And I do think that unexpected at the end to see him just winning repeatedly over and over.
Yeah, agreed. Now, I don't think Susie purposely followed the sixth rule, but she followed it nevertheless, and it got her to the end. It just seemed that every time somebody thought about getting rid of her, another juicier target made him or herself available. So as we've said, she stayed low under the radar and, you know, just agreed to vote out anyone who wasn't named Susie. It continued all the way to the end. You know, I mean, after all, why did Sugar choose to boot Ken instead of Susie? Because Ken was the bigger threat. Who knew Susie would be able to win the final immunity challenge?
I know that I didn't expect either. And as I'm rewatching, I'm expecting Bob to win at that point.
Yeah, me too.
Like, well, I forgot about the fire making. Oh, I forgot about all of this.
Yeah.
So I was watching this going, how the hell does Bob end up in the final three?
Yes.
What is going on right now?
Yes.
And like, maybe Sugar wins. And that's why, I mean, because she was building that crazy but pretty tall house of cards. Mm-hmm. And then I'm like, wait, what? Susie went? I was baffled. I was confused. And then obviously it all makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, I could only imagine. I mean, it's too long ago to remember for sure, but watching it originally, I'm sure I must have been like, oh, Bob's dead.
Yeah.
Because I was watching it and I knew the outcome. And I was like, well, Bob's dead. How did, you know, what am I living in a parallel universe where Bob didn't win and I've been taking notes on the wrong person?
That was exactly what I was going through. I'm like, I'm so confused right now. How does he get to the final three at that point? Yeah.
Yeah. It's like we're in the Mandela effect or something like that. You know, oh, this is the world where Bob doesn't win.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy.
So just almost as crazy as what actually happened. All right. So we can move to the seventh rule, which covers dealing with idols and advantages. And yes, Sugar had an immunity idol, but there's really not much to discuss because everybody knew she had it and she never used it.
Yeah. And I think what was weird about this season was that there was only one. You know, and even though she found it right away, they gave all the same clues to that same spot. They never they never put a second one out there. There was none at the
There was another one. They just threw it in the ocean.
No, but that wasn't back at Exile. That was at the
fake,
you know, merge feast that they were all having.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually enjoyed the fact that there wasn't so many idols and that it was just basically that one that never really, I mean, it was used eventually by Sugar or Maddie, but I do think that it was interesting to see a game with a lack of idol play.
Yeah. Now, I think if she had used it, it would have been replanted at Exile.
I agree.
So, but with it not having been used, they never replanted it.
I know.
So
but I feel like they would.
And the other one, they would have had to fish out of the ocean. So
I really wish that what Bob's concocted story was.
Yes.
I wish that was true because that would have been amazing.
Yeah. And in fact, you know, Bob based that story to make his second fake idol, you know, after making the first one. Which, as I was watching, I was like, oh, Bob, you should have used that story for your first one because people already know you've made a fake one. Why would you have made a fake one if you had a real one? You know,
but
both of his idols were well made and convincing. And he created the first one with the idea of letting it be seen in order to save himself, which obviously was not how it was used. But we already discussed how he was threatened into using it that way. And then he used the second one to try to save Corinne, but that didn't work. Now, at the time, I was thinking, you know, and all my notes are about how the whole thing was mishandled and Kenny overthought it and tried to double back. But Kenny then later claimed in his interview with me that he knew the second one was fake and he was playing along for reasons that never really made any sense to me and that it was just edited to make it look like. Now, was this him, you know, again, revisiting history and rewriting it? Or was it really that way? Did he know that it was fake? I don't know, but the reasoning behind it never made any sense to me. And so.
Yeah, I don't know. He's bitter, so it's difficult to know.
Right. Yeah, he may not want to admit that. You know, Bob got one over on him.
Right. Those fake idols are the best fake idols I think anyone has ever made on Survivor. That was ridiculous.
Well, one of them, I don't remember if this was in an interview or if Rob, someone on the previous podcast mentioned it, but apparently he took a skull face off of the immunity necklace for one of them.
Really?
Yeah. So, one, I'm surprised he was allowed to do that. Two, I'm surprised no one noticed, but I guess he wore it more than anyone.
Nice.
You know, and other stuff, he just tore stuff down. Now, you know, Kenny said he noticed that. That may have been where it was. It may have been my interview with Kenny that he said he noticed that. And that's how he knew.
I doubt it.
Yeah.
Well, I will say, as someone who was a hoarder out there, I ripped a lot of stuff down I wasn't supposed to and put it in my bag. So you can certainly.
Where's your fake immunity idol?
I had a little collection of things in my bag that I was going to try to utilize to make one if I needed to. But I even found a bone at one point. I was like, this would work. I could definitely put a bone on here. But to future Survivor players, yes, you should definitely snag whatever you can and hide it in your bag, because you just never know.
Just don't grab the white rock.
Yeah. Black.
Oh, it was black? Okay, grab the white rock. Don't grab the black rock. Sorry. Maybe you took my advice in retrospect and you grabbed
my God.
The wrong
this
one.
Is
it's
the Mandela
my fault.
Effect. It's the
it's
Mandela
my fault.
Effect.
Yeah.
Yes, it
Sorry.
Is. The butterfly effect. See what
yeah.
happened?
Mm. Yeah. Mm. So, all right. Well, let's quickly move on for that before I get myself in more trouble. go to Appendix A, which is about the rest of the tribe keeping their end goals in mind when voting. And of course, says to vote out the weak, then the strong, then the weak, then the strong. We've already discussed how Bob and Susie went along with whatever, so we can't really credit them for following this rule, even though it was generally followed in terms of voting out the power players leading into and at the merge.
Yeah.
I mean, there were so many that went out, boom, boom, boom.
Mm-hmm.
We certainly cannot say that Sugar voted out the right people to keep her end goals in mind for the game, because she kept people with the strongest chances of winning in the final four.
Yeah.
But we've already covered those things, so I don't think we really need to spend much, if any, more time on that.
No, and I will just add that one of, I think, Sugar's biggest hindrances here was, I think she bought into information that she was being provided from other people too easily in kind of flipping on those people and then mm-hmm. deciding, oh, well, no, I should vote this person out, and then finding out afterwards, oh, that person lied to me and that's not true. And so I think that that definitely affected her ability to really make a better choice as to who she should keep. You know, like when she voted out Ace and realizing I shouldn't have voted out Ace and that Kenny had lied to her and those things. So I do think that that definitely affected her ability to make those choices.
Yeah, I think she learned on the fly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In that regard. All right. Now we can come to the long awaited Appendix B. I see you're settling in for it.
I know. I have to keep moving. My foot is falling asleep. I'm sitting on a couch, so it's
like that. It's like the wooden bench. See, so Appendix B covers the jury phase and final tribal council, and this one was a doozy,
mm-hmm.
or maybe a better word is a snoozy. At least in terms of listening to the finalists, because Bob didn't do so great here. While he spoke the best out of the three. That's like saying he outran Crystal up the hill in the premiere. Yeah. You know, he didn't explain himself in a way that was likely to earn votes that he didn't already have in his pocket. Yeah. In particular, he told the jury not once, but twice, well, twice that we saw, that he didn't step up and strategize. Juries are not known for handing over the $1 million to players who admit that they didn't really have any strategy.
Mm-hmm.
So on my original watch, I thought he had just blown it. But like I said, he wasn't earning votes from people that he didn't have in his pocket, but he did already have three there, with Randy being a fourth who was at least halfway there, because as we've discussed, Randy had no use whatsoever for either Sugar or Susie.
Right. And I do think that one of Bob's biggest faults is just his honesty. And he acknowledged, and I've mentioned it. Woo! Oh my God. See, I almost knocked my whole camera over. This is terrible. This is not a good setup, ladies and gentlemen. I should have done this. So I would say that one of his biggest faults truly is his inability to really, like, not even lie, but he is so honest and so just humble that he doesn't want to oversell himself. He doesn't want to make it sound as if he's better than anyone else. And this was, and I've mentioned it before, the reason why he initially wasn't even going to be put on the show.
Right.
And he only got on the show because I think it was Jimmy Johnson had a heart attack. And so he got the call and like, hey, we need you to come out. Would you be on the show? And he wasn't a shoo-in. He wasn't going, they sent him home from casting and like, no, because he was so honest in his desire to not be deceitful mm-hmm. and not lie to people. And so I think we saw a lot of that when Bob was sitting in that final tribal where he was just being honest. He didn't want to sit there and say, well, I'm better than these two. And this is why I'm better than these two. He wanted his actions to speak for the type of person he was, that he wanted people to see what he had done for the tribe, and see what he had done in challenges to bring them to the decision that he should win, as opposed to selling himself in that moment and reminding them all why he was better than the other two sitting next to him. But I don't think he has the ability to do that, because he's just a humble, honest individual who doesn't feel comfortable putting down other people. And I think that's why he really just fumbled so much in his final tribal.
Yeah, it was a humble fumble. if we were doing hashtags, you know, that different than the way we would do hashtag humble fumble. But yeah, I think you're right. I think he doesn't like to talk about himself. And I think that's what happened in the reunion show also.
Yep.
Because, yeah, I was blown away when he said, I didn't outwit or outplay you. How did he? Okay, fine. You don't want to say you outwit them. Well, one, you should have said that, but fine. He should have at least said, I outplayed you all with my challenge wins.
Right.
That was the biggest thing he could hang his hat on. And from what we saw, he didn't even mention it.
I know.
And then he said he rode coattails, but he didn't need to do anything differently to get there. I don't remember any other finalist so blatantly admitting to that.
Yeah. And no one wants anyone who rides coattails to win. I mean, that is like a survivor. No, that's not. Yeah. That's not a factor that anyone sitting on the jury is like, I want to vote for someone who rode on someone's coattails. And for him to be using that as a selling point for himself as to how he got there certainly isn't going to bode well with why he should win. And I did not remember this final tribal being so terrible. And that was the rewatch. I was able to really, wow, this is awful. Like, this is one of the worst final tribal councils I've ever seen, because everyone was doing such a bad job at selling themselves and trying to earn.
Oh, yeah.
It was almost like they were trying to, like, no, I don't want it. You take it.
Yeah.
I don't want the $1 million. You have it. No, you have it. I don't want it. And it was so weird to watch. It was so weird.
Yeah. And that, you know, that's what I was going to say. As poorly as Bob did, he was great compared to the other two.
Yeah.
You know, Susie told me, I was surprised it was that close. I didn't come close to doing as well as Bob did.
Oh,
Susie told me that.
Yeah.
You know, that's really saying something. You know, she didn't look at all ready. She spoke so poorly. I wasn't even sure what point she was trying to make. Upon reflection and having heard more from her, I think she was trying to say she should win because she was an average housewife who had to beat out all these people who were smarter and more physical than her.
Yeah.
But that's not really a winning argument. Basically, what she was saying is, you people on the jury were smarter and better than me, and I'm still here, so I deserve it.
And I will say this, that is, it's a good thing to do to remind the people who are sitting on the jury why great, you know, like why you think they're great. Like, I voted you out because you were a threat to me, because it builds them up a little bit, right? You can make that person feel better about themselves. And maybe get them to like you a little bit more because you're speaking well of them and you're giving them props. But the way that Susie did it was not giving them props and expecting that in return they feel something for her. She was literally like putting herself down.
Right.
Like, I made it here. Like, I made it to the final three.
I tried.
Like, I should have been voted out like at the beginning, but I just worked hard and I kept trying. And here I am. And so to all of those people sitting in the jury, she's like, yeah, you are all so much better than me and should be sitting here, but I made it. Like, I got here and I should get a pat on the back for that or something.
And right. It was $1 million pat on the back.
Yeah. So it was. But I also think that, again, in the way that Susie is, that she genuinely believed that.
Yes.
You know, that she really believed that I made it here. And because I made it here, I should win. Because I didn't have to do all of those things that you were all doing and I still made it here. To me, I think she thought that that was a great explanation for her entire game.
Yeah, I mean, she wasn't trying to say what she thought they wanted to hear. She was being her. Again, no filter between brain and mouth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and fine, that's perfectly admirable in real life. It's not going to win $1 million, even though it came scary close.
It really did come close.
Yeah, I mean, she needed to have thought out her arguments better to try to win over somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure she could have accomplished it, but she only needed one more person.
I know. Yeah. And she, it's unfortunate when you see people who are in the final three that don't recognize how terribly the other person sitting next to them is doing and kind of latch onto it. Yes. And we have seen so many survivors do that, where they're in that final three and they are obliterating the people that they're sitting with because they're latching on to the things that they have said and using that in their arguments and as to why they should win. And if Susie had that type of personality, Susie could have done that. But I don't think that's Susie's personality either. Like we've got Bob struggling with his inability to be that humble, honest guy. Susie's inability to just be Susie. I mean, she can't be anything but. No filter, saying whatever comes to her mind and not understanding the way that it's coming across and how it sounds for the people on the receiving.
Yeah. And neither of them have any sort of killer instinct.
Right.
You know, to do that jumping on, you know, like as a comparison or a contrast in Token Teens, you had two players who worked together the whole game. They were friends, which is, you know, different from Bob and Susie. But then at the end, JT just rips Steven apart.
Yeah.
Steven didn't know what hit him. Here, there is no killer instinct whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, much like Bob, Susie admitted that she didn't play strategically. Mm-hmm. You know, that she waited for others to tell her what to do. Even at the final five, she was still like, I'm just going to lie here and someone tell me what to do. You know, the one strategic move that she made was to turn against many of the jurors and piss them off.
Yep.
You know, I mean, yeah, don't get me wrong. They were vindictive because she got them before they could get her. But they also knew she didn't have a strategic bone in her body and she couldn't even legitimately say, I outplayed you. She just flipped.
Yeah. And again, that's the moment that anyone who is in that final three has to grab onto is whatever they did in the game that sets them apart that they can point to and say, this is a big move that I made. And Susie had that. She had that Marcus flip. She could have spun that in such a way that she really did kind of decide the trajectory of the entire game at the end, because she took out all of those players right after that flip. It was because of that flip all of those players could be taken out. I should say it that way. She wasn't the mastermind behind all of that, but it was because of that flip.
Right.
Suddenly there was people in that final that should have never been there.
Mm-hmm.
And now this is what we have. And it was because of that move with Marcus. But again, she didn't utilize that at all. Didn't talk about it. Didn't really talk about the effects of it and how it just determined the outcome of the game. Nothing like that.
Yeah. Now, moving on to Sugar, as Rob mentioned in his podcast about the season, she said she felt like she played the perfect social game, which is an utterly ridiculous statement. I'm surprised she could say it with a straight face. I guess that shows what a good actress she is. you know, in the recap episode, Corinne said, at least we have the jury and we'll never give the win to Sugar. And yeah, that was certainly true. You know, as we've discussed, Sugar wasn't interested in winning over the jury anyway, but rather winning over America. You know, flipping off Corinne, while completely warranted in that situation, wasn't going to win her any jury votes. The same could be said of her other reactions and responses. But they would make viewers cheer. Unfortunately for Sugar, this was all shown after the $100,000 popularity contest was already decided.
Yeah. Well, and I will say this, too, as far as Sugar's performance in the final tribal, I did read her quarantine interview with Dalton. And one of the things that she said, which struck me as incredibly odd, I don't know if you had a chance to read that.
No, I forgot the quarantine.
And that's what, listen, you read way more of the stuff than I do, so it's fine. This is why I go down these weird paths, because I try to find interesting and strange things. She actually said that she had been drugged right before the final tribal. And I was like, what? She was given drugs. And so I got in touch with her because I was like, I need to know if this is an actual thing. And so I reached out to her and she said that she was.
And the reason that you're able to get in touch with her is because you're part of the Secret Survivor Society of Jessicas, right?
There are a lot of us, but not very many actually went with the name Jessica. I'm one of the few. I will just throw that out there. Most of them have a nickname. So, yes, that Secret Survivor
Society of Jessicas. SSSJ.
And she did inform me that she was about to have a panic attack prior to the final tribal, and that they did give her a shot that they had prepared, that they warned her could cause convulsions, but they were going to, but this is what they were going to do. And that's what she said. And I thought, this is incredible. I don't know any more about it than that. I just asked her if that's what happened and if it was true. And she asked me if it came from the Dalton article, and I told her that that's where I had gotten it from. And if that is the case, now knowing that information after having watched the final tribal, I feel like I understand her persona a little bit better. If that's kind of her lack of energy,
you mean?
Yes, because she shared some more with me about how she would have been had she not been given that particular drug at that point in time. That there might have been some jumping across the fire at some people. So I do think that probably explains a lot of her affect and how she reacted to people, and the conversation, like when Charlie was asking her a question and she was like, well, you don't have to vote for him if you don't want to. And just kind of this almost aloof attitude about the whole thing, and not really owning the fact that she did control so many aspects of the game.
Right.
And made so many things happen. And the reason why Bob is even sitting there is because that was her choice.
Mm-hmm.
Not that that's a great selling point, but it just goes to show how much she was controlling the game, that she controlled it so much so she decided who was going to be sitting here and not necessarily Susie. And so there was a lot of things that she could have argued
right.
and that she could have pointed at as part of the controlling of the game. And she didn't. And I feel like if that's really what happened, and I believe her, because I don't think she would lie to me about that. And I don't think she would lie to Dalton. I don't think she would lie to anybody about that. So I think that is what affected her ability to perform in that final tribal.
Yeah. And I mean, it's kind of a damned if you do, damned if you don't. You don't get that medication, you have a panic attack.
Right.
You're not going to be any better off. You're going to be worse off.
Exactly. Yeah.
And so, it's a downside with, medications often have side effects. And unfortunately, if you're trying to calm someone down, you may overcalm them, especially when they don't have a whole lot of food in their system. And,
and seeing some of the things that she was presented with, the fact that she didn't lose her shit, honestly, in that final tribal, she must have been under the influence of something in order to maintain her composure in those moments.
I was like, wow,
what she could have done.
That's what I was thinking too. Is like, I just figured it was that she knew, she was done for, and it was like, fine, you people do whatever. And I do think, medication or no medication, I don't think it would have changed the outcome. These people came there with no intent of voting for Sugar.
Oh, for sure. And that's another point that I'm glad you went back to that, because Corinne did make that comment about having the jury.
Yeah.
And this goes back to a point that we've discussed a lot, is how the jury talks to each other and that they do influence each other when they're discussing the game and who they think should win and why this person should win. There's a lot of influence happening, and it is very similar to a jury that you would see in our criminal justice system, where people are talking about things that they've seen, they're talking about what's been presented to them, and they're making a determination based upon all of those things.
Yeah.
Here, not everyone needs to agree, but you can certainly influence people. And so I do think that there was a lot of influencing happening that we did not see in relationship to the jury, because there were so many people who disliked her so much.
Well, and I don't know that they needed to influence each other, because I think there was one group. Well, both groups disliked Sugar.
Mm-hmm.
One group disliked Susie. One group liked Susie. It wasn't so much they disliked Bob. So I think that you had these two disparate groups, which, by the way, seeing the Ponderosa videos, there was not, in your season, when people got voted out, they were all welcome. You know, and in most seasons, it doesn't matter what happened in the game. You were welcome with hugs and high fives. Of course, there was one situation with you that, you know, wasn't as huggy. You know, but they played that up for drama and you guys made up. So,
yes. But
in this case, there were situations where people showed up and like nobody was there. It was like, you know, screw off. We're not even going to say hello to you. We're over here doing our own thing. And so, this was not a high-fiving, back-slapping season where they were all going to make up at the end. There were two different groups. And the one thing they all had in common was nobody was going to vote for Sugar.
Yeah, it's almost like that group think, mob mentality kind of thing, where if everyone starts to project that they feel this way, then it builds and it festers, and then people continue to find reasons to support that idea. Mm-hmm. And again, we didn't see everything that happened out there in relationship to Sugar and what she did to these individuals. But there seems to be such a deep-seated, like, almost hatred for her that I'm curious as to what is that truly based on and why it became such a resonating theme when people were in the jury. And just there was one nice thing said about Sugar, and I think it was by Kenny before they went to the final tribal, when he commented on whether or not he would vote for Sugar. And he did say something nice. And so I thought walking into it, oh, well, maybe she's got a shot. Just because I couldn't remember who got the votes, right?
Right.
But then to see how she was treated, it was definitely uncomfortable. And so I do think that this is a group of jurors that are very just kind of crotchety people. I don't even know how else to describe it. Like,
they were angry.
They were so angry. Look, I'm knocking over my. And I get it. I understand. You're out there and you have to vote for someone to win $1 million. Of course, that's what you have to do. But to just be mean for the sake of being mean, to me, is not, there's no point to it.
Right.
Base it upon the gameplay, base it upon things that happened in the game. But to just be mean for that sake of just getting a sound bite, I don't like it.
Yeah. Now, you did mention Kenny might vote for Sugar. And although we talked about him at the beginning, I did want to talk about him as a juror a little bit more. Because as we discussed at the beginning of the podcast, he was supposed to be the most strategic player this season. But he voted for the least strategic player of the season.
Mm-hmm.
So I asked him about that in my interview with him. And he said he wanted everyone to be honest with him at Final Tribal Council and answer the way he wanted them to. Now, notice that. He wanted them to be honest and answer that way.
Right.
Well, what if the honest answer wasn't the way you wanted? Well, that's actually what happened.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted Sugar to say she was a mastermind playing him since day one. But she didn't say that. Well, why didn't she say that? Because it wasn't true, Ken.
Right.
You know, he forgot he played her before she played him.
Right.
It was okay when he did it, but not okay when she did it.
Yes. Oh. We need to come back to that point.
Yeah. You know, he wanted Bob to say that he was playing Ken and never intended to give him the necklace in the first place. But we've already talked about how he didn't say that and couldn't say that. Bob answered honestly, but Kenny deluded himself into thinking that was a lie.
Yeah.
So for the other two players besides Susie, you can't have both things. You can't give the honest answer plus the answer that he wanted to hear.
Right.
And so, but he said Susie was the most honest, talking about her flip and final immunity challenge. And he ended by saying, I thought she played a pretty good game, though she rode coattails. But she's not physical and wasn't as smart as a lot of other players out there. That's why I gave it to Susie. So the key to earning the vote of allegedly the most strategic player there was to be less physical and less smart than everyone else.
Apparently. Yeah. No, that's weird. I do think that your point about it's okay when Kenny did it, and it's not okay when anyone else did it. I honestly feel like that's how a lot of these people on the jury came across. That if they did it, if they were mean to someone, if they treated someone a particular way, if they voted a particular way, if they strategized a particular way, it was fine when they did it. But when it got turned on them and then somebody did it to them, then suddenly it wasn't okay anymore. And I feel like a lot of the people who, I mean, like Randy, I love Randy, don't get me wrong, but like the fact that Randy was so upset about the damn cookies, this is a guy who was genuinely mean to people when he was out there. And then this whole cookie thing happened and then he was all upset with how he had been treated. And it's like, but dude, that's what you do to people. Like, that's how you've been to all of these people. Don't, and you, they can't do the same thing back to you. So I feel like a lot of the individuals that we saw on the jury had that same type of construct going on when they were viewing their games versus the other people who were playing the game with them.
Yeah, I think it's something we see, quite honestly, a lot. I mean, I'm sure we have talked about the hypocrisy involved in Survivor and Big Brother. You know, it's if you make a good move against me before I can make a good move against you, well, then, you know, that's terrible. How could you do that?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I know we have talked about, well, I guess this was with Rob. You know, there were people that I talked about in who were upset that, well, that person voted for me in Final Four. So, of course, I'm never going to give them the win. Yeah, but you voted for them in Final Four, too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So what are you talking about? That you voted against each other.
Yeah.
But it's okay for you to have done, but not okay for the other person to have done.
Yep.
You know, yep. And that's why I like seasons like yours, where people understood it was a game.
Yeah.
And yes, you got me. All right. You know, and even then, you know, there was some that, you know, there was some hard feelings at times. I know.
There definitely is.
But, you know, there's just seasons like this where every game move is taken as a personal affront.
Yes, exactly.
But partially, I think that's because so many people disliked each other. Like under normal circumstances, maybe that cookie thing wouldn't have been a big deal. But Randy already disliked Sugar. Randy already disliked other people.
Right.
And when you dislike someone, something that they do automatically just makes it so much bigger.
Yeah.
I see it all the time. I see it in regular everyday situations.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can go back to, I mean, and I'll use this example because no one will know who I'm talking about. I saw it when my kid was playing Little League. You know, the coach had some kids he had known practically forever and some kids who were new and he thought of them differently. Well, when his kid or someone else that he knew would make an error, he'd be like, oh, that's okay. Go get him next time. You know,
yeah.
When one of the other kids would do it, he'd yell at them and pull them from the game.
Yep.
It's like it was the same error. But it's just when you don't like someone or you have a lower opinion of them, anything they do is going to blow up bigger. And that happened all the time this season.
Yes. And I do think that that is one of the hopes that production has with Survivor, right? Is that because you're in this environment and it's 24/7, you are forced to live with these people regardless of how you actually feel about them.
Mm-hmm.
I think they are hoping that you're just going to get underneath each other's skin and everything's going to bother you and it's going to cause you to blow up and do all of these crazy things and say crazy things. And boy, did they really knock it out of the park with this season, because everybody just annoyed the crap out of everybody from day one. It was just... Can anyone be more miserable than these people? It was amazing to me. And so the fact that anyone thinks that Sugar got the best edit and she was really not a nice person when she was out there, maybe you have to kind of look back at yourself too and say, well, maybe I wasn't the nicest person when I was out there. And who am I to judge? I don't know. I wasn't out there, but I do think
you
that
just
in that
don't want to get thrown out of the secret society of Survivor Jessica's. I know you're trying to cover yourself.
No, people should really understand that there is a point of Survivor where, yes, you are definitely going to get underneath each other's skin. And I know that decisions are based upon who do you like more sometimes, for sure. But there should also be more of a respect for actual gameplay. And I do think that this season in particular, there was such a lack of respect for actual gameplay. And
reason for all these, you know.
I know. And there was such an inability for people to appreciate gameplay and focus on it. Is it so? Yes, I do think everyone needs a reminder of those rules.
Yeah. Yeah. So with that, it's about time to wrap things up. In you wrapped up the general stuff, but what are your final thoughts?
I love Bob.
Yeah. All right. That was a very short final thought.
Okay. Moving on.
No, I'm just,
I know. Listen, I could go on forever about Bob, because I will say this. When I initially watched the season, it wasn't something that impressed me greatly. I mean, some of the people I remembered, I didn't remember very many people from the season. So it wasn't one of those seasons that I was like, hoorah, I'm going to watch Gabon again.
Mm-hmm.
But so the rewatch was nice, and it really did make me appreciate Bob for reasons that I had never appreciated him before. I do think that his physical abilities and the challenges was mind blowing. And he is such a genuinely nice person to just watch on television. And you actually got to watch someone enjoy their experience while also kicking everyone's ass while he was out there. So it was a fun rewatch for me as far as Bob is concerned. And I will say that while Bob admittedly was a very bad strategist, he owned the fact that he was a bad strategist. So perhaps we should give him some credit for that, right? That he at least owned it in the end. And one thing that we didn't say, but I did find about Bob, was that he voted correctly only 56% of the time when he was at tribal council. So clearly he wasn't really in the thick of things all the time and wasn't controlling matters. But he was able to still get to the end. And it really came down to his physical abilities and those challenges. And lucky for him, as you referenced, the order in which they occurred allowed him to continue to win and stay there, and then allow him to get to a point where it came down to a relationship. And that's ultimately what Bob should really be the most grateful for having, is his ability to create such a close bond with Sugar that gave him an opportunity to sit in that fire-making challenge and end up in the final three. I think all of us were shocked trying to remember how that happened, and we talked about that. So overall, I mean, yes, well, Bob was not a strategist, and Bob didn't go into Survivor for anything other than the experience, and he wanted to play the game and do it in his Bob way, which he clearly did. The Bob way won for him, because he managed to bring it home at the end and become a physical threat, which nobody saw coming. So kudos to him for doing that. As far as Susie and Sugar, I'll just kind of put them together. I do think that the two of them were an interesting pair to see sitting in the final three against someone like Bob, because you did have someone who was such a physical threat and someone who was deemed such a threat to win. And then to have these two individuals sitting next to him that nobody ever, I think, once said was a threat. I don't think I ever heard the word threat come out of anyone's mouth in relationship to Susie or Sugar. I heard a lot of other things be said about these two individuals. So I was shocked that Bob didn't just sweep across, I mean, but we've talked about the relationships people had. So that was a surprising thing to see, that he didn't just sweep all of the votes. But I do think that, again, Susie and Sugar lacked what a lot of these rules remind us of, is that you do need to have a strategic mindset when you're playing Survivor. You do need to make decisions not based upon emotions. And you need to actually own what you are doing and be able to present it to that jury and say, this is what I did. Neither of those two did that well. We didn't see that. And they really failed in so many components of the rules. I was surprised that Susie got 3 votes, because she did fail so miserably at many of these rules. But so did Sugar. And unfortunately, Sugar failed worse, I guess, because she got no votes. So overall, the end result was shocking to me, because I do feel like Bob, out of the 3 people sitting there, probably should have done better, considering the relationships that people had and the feelings that people had for the 3 people sitting there. Wasn't based upon strategy, game control, nothing. It was purely based upon social relationships that had been formed.
Yeah. Yeah. Like you, I like Bob a lot as a person. I was glad to see him win from a personal perspective. Certainly not from the standpoint of someone who watches the game mostly for strategy. Then again, none of these finalists would have fulfilled that role. The fact is that Bob had a fair amount of luck and help in getting to the end. Bob, We would be an understatement to say Bob was not among the best strategists, schemers, or plotters. He stayed under the radar until he needed to move above it, and then hung on mostly by winning challenges. But the odds were against him winning forever, and he finally lost the last one. That was when Sugar took over. We can attribute Sugar's favoritism of Bob to his own personality. After all, if he had been a Randy or a Corinne, there's no way Sugar would have wanted to save him. This is an example of a very good reason to be nice instead of mean on Survivor.
Mm-hmm.
But even more so, we have to point to Sugar's actions and give credit to them just as Bob himself did. How important was Sugar to Bob winning? Well, I asked him if he owed Sugar a debt of gratitude. And he said, without a doubt, if it weren't for Sugar, I'd be talking to you later. Which, by later, this was on the schedule when I was interviewing him. It would have been later when the fourth place contestant was scheduled to talk to me. Sugar agreed, as I mentioned earlier, that she had said to her sister that Bob's family should love her because, quote, I'm about to give him $1 million. Without Sugar, Bob would have been in the jury in fourth place, probably voting along with almost everybody else, or maybe indeed everybody else, to give Maddie the money. Bob got himself as far as he could in the game by staying out of harm's way and winning immunities. I don't want to belittle how well he did in those regards, because if he hadn't succeeded there, he never would have made it to the point where Sugar's affection for him took over. But it wasn't like Bob planned it this way. He didn't actively try to cozy up to Sugar so she would save him. I doubt it was ever even on his mind, as it was clear he thought he was done for when Susie won the final immunity challenge. It was Bob's personality that connected with Sugar, not any strategy that led up to it. He found the right friend at the right time who had many different motivations other than winning the game. Both her emotional state and her plans for the future made her want to support Bob. Bob did what he needed to in order to make his way along in the game. But when he faltered, it was Sugar who saved him and put him into the position to win. Even then, he almost blew it with the jury, but was up against two people who blew it even more. And that is why Bob won.
Yep, and he's still rocking the ties.
He is. Yeah, we met him. Well, I met him. I don't remember if you were there. I'll have to look at where it was. It was at one of the know-it-alls.
Yeah, I don't think I've had the pleasure of meeting
him. All of a sudden, I was in the bathroom, and all of a sudden, he was there. I was like, Bob! You know?
Oh, my God, I'm knocking over his head. That's amazing.
He wanted to take a picture in the bathroom together. I was like, no, let's go outside and take the picture.
Let's
not
be in the bathroom.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Now, we do have a listener question I want to discuss before we're done, even though it's an hour and 48 minutes. Now,
oh, my gosh.
Yeah. I mean, people are going to look at the time on this and be like, how the hell could you spend 2 hours talking about freaking Bob? And the answer is, as I was writing my notes, I told you, when people do a lot of things right, you have a lot of notes. When people do a lot of things wrong, you also have a lot of notes.
Right. For sure.
This was definitely the latter one.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, we'll get to the listener question in a minute. But first, let me remind everyone that the rules we just discussed, and I mean, it's difficult to, you know, for anyone who's watching the video to have not been reminded of this already. But, you know, the rules are available as a poster. There it is. And two different types of T-shirts plus a mug.
Yeah.
For the shirts or mug, go to robhasawebsite.com or robhasapodcast.com. Click on the merch link and either browse or search for rules. For the poster, go to tinyurl.com/davidrulesposter2. Now, the listener question is from Giovanni Orlana, who wants to know who the better winner is, Chris Underwood, Bob, or Fabio. I already said Chris is automatically last, period, for reasons we've previously discussed at great length. So
I would agree with that sentiment.
I knew you would. I didn't even have that as an option to ask.
And I'm
you.
Sorry, Chris Underwood, because I know he hates the podcast that we made about him. So I apologize.
We made it very clear. We made it very clear it wasn't about him. It was about the show.
It's definitely about the show.
I know it's difficult if someone made a podcast like me or two or three or however many we did. I understand it would be you know, difficult to get over that. So, right. You know, but yeah, I still rank him last. So who do you think is a better winner, Bob or Fabio?
I'm going with Bob. And you know why? Because I'm going to support what I've been saying, is that sometimes you vote for someone just because you like them more. I like Bob more.
Well, I do like Bob better.
Yeah.
But from the standpoint of making things happen on his own, you know, I'm going to say, and we recently podcasted about Fabio.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say Fabio edges out Bob in terms of, especially if we're looking in terms of following the rules.
I know. And I'm not following the rules, but I will. But I know I'm guilty of this. But also, though, if you just the threat level, Fabio was never seen as a threat, right? Nobody thought.
But that's
Fabio
one of the rules, is to not be seen as a threat. He purposely made himself act right. Even dumber.
Right. So, I mean, I don't know. I think that there's a lot to be said about Bob recognizing the fact that he was getting voted out. He definitely was, and he needed to win, and he won all those challenges. Granted, he lost that last one, but yeah, I know we just talked about it for like an hour, 45 minutes, so I won't.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, as we wrap up, I want to encourage people to check out the RHAP patron program at robhasawebsite.com/patron. And by the way, as I'm about to say this, people don't turn off the podcast or the video. We have news coming up. But anyway, we're in the middle of the month. You know the news. Don't look around like
that. I do?
Yes.
I seriously. Okay. Yeah. I know the news.
So that, you know, we're in the middle of the month. So new patrons can either join right now or wait until the beginning of May if you want. Once you do join, you'll see that RHAP's patron program has so many different ways to have fun and interact. There's Patron Family Feud, Patron Mafia, and more. There's even a patron-only follow-up podcast for each Survivor season in the countdown. I listened to it just this morning before we recorded this. And Rob still has the monthly patron call-in shows, the weekly Q&A shows with Nicole. I even just heard there's going to be patron karaoke. Now,
wow.
I have an idea that Rob should listen to here. I think he should create.
You should rap.
Well, no. Well, the opposite of that. I think he should create a patron level where someone can join and has the power at this higher level to forbid me from singing in karaoke.
No, I don't like that because yeah. I want you to get up there and rap.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, anyway, when Rob isn't talking directly to everyone, there are Facebook groups to keep you occupied with a great community of people, including both of us, where you could talk about Survivor, Big Brother, The Circle, life in general. Mm-hmm. So remember, again, to go to robhasawebsite.com/patron. And once you get to the Facebook groups, make sure to say hello.
And you should also say hello on Twitter. I am at JessicaLewis89 right there. And he is at David Bloomberg. I'll let him point out.
Maybe.
You should definitely follow us both. You can get both sides of the story. You can see all the incredible selfies that David Bloomberg likes to post of himself.
Right.
So many. And eventually, when Survivor starts again, which it started, you know, so we will be able to tweet about that live tweet during the actual episode. So again, it's at JessicaLewis89 and at David.
Yes. And again, as a reminder, for those of you with iPhones or iPads, there is a newer social media outlet that you may have heard about. You may have heard Rob talk about it, and that's Clubhouse. Jessica, of course, is patiently waiting for them to open up to Android users. But you can find me there also as at David Bloomberg. There's also an RHAP club. I have plenty of invitations I can give out. So if anyone needs one, hit me up on social media.
Maybe I'll just use my daughter's phone so I can stalk you.
There you go.
Clubhouse.
It's not really stalking. You actually have to listen and I see you. So it's really bad stalking if you're doing it.
Damn it. All right.
Our hashtag, of course, as always for these is why Bob won, even though we came up with hashtag humble fumble earlier. Of course, the hashtag for this podcast overall is why X lost. Make sure you're subscribed to all of the RHAP Survivor podcasts at robhasapodcast.com/survivor or on your favorite podcatcher. We are also on the reality TV Rehap Ups feed, and you should subscribe to that too. In both places, you can find a wide variety of great content, including, of course, the whole countdown.
And we would also like to thank Scott St. Pierre for all of the incredible editing that he does on this podcast, both the audio and video. I almost said visual. So thank you so much for that, Scott St. Pierre. And also thank you to Will from America for the incredible theme song that you have written for this podcast, Why Blank Lost. So thank you so much for that. We love it. It's very catchy. You should check it out at the beginning and then replay it every time.
Yes. Now, also, thanks, Jessica, for joining me once again to talk Survivor, even though it may have been, was the least strategic final three ever.
It was interesting.
And sure. Yes. For the news, which isn't news to some of you because I've mentioned it in the Facebook group. See, patron Facebook groups. Mm. Although we sometimes have a bit of a gap in between these, we're going to have a rare back-to-back week.
Oh, that's the news.
That's the news.
I put it aside. I forgot about it.
Well, you can't put it aside. You got to start watching again.
I do.
Because we'll be right back here next week to talk about why Natalie won Survivor Samoa.
Mm-hmm.
So we will see everyone in just 7 days.
Wish me luck, everyone.
Yeah, well, wish me more luck. But yes, wish everybody luck. We've got a season to watch. And we'll see you then.
Wish you more luck? What is that supposed to mean? Because you have to put up with me?
No, because I also am probably going to be on a Circle podcast next week.
Oh, yeah. So, I just want to clear that up for the listeners so they know. It's not like 4 days.
So I wasn't going to officially announce it yet. But yes, I will probably also be on a Circle podcast at some point next week, I believe after we record. But yes, I have to make sure to watch all the Circle episodes and listen to all those podcasts.
Mm. Good luck.
But for the purposes of Survivor, we will be here again in 1 week.
Excellent. Bye.
Bye.
You lost Survivor and you're feeling down. David and Jessica will turn it around. They'll break down the rules and they'll show you how. You played yourself and got voted out. This is why blank lost. And this is why blank lost. Oh, baby, this is why blank lost.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.